The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the December issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. And when we go to the front cover, we have a picture of Connor Bedard. And he leads a wave of young superstars upending the sports world establishment. Then we have Make or Break the Lakers. Then New Order. And let's find out what we can look forward to in this issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Right in the middle of page one, we have a picture here of On Fire, number 22, Shohei Ohtani gave us the greatest performance in baseball history. Here are some other GOAT games. Then on page 16, we have, what if you found yourself trying to build a Lakers dynasty with Shaq and Kobe? Page 34, in a year filled with amazing performances by young athletes, Connor Bedard stood out. Our Gotta Get It Right guide features plenty of pickleball games and one very scary squishable doll. That's on page 42. We asked for your best LeBron James drawing, and the response was not disappointing. That's on page 44. And on page 48, twins Cameron and Caden Boozer have spent their lives looking out for each other and their older brother. Faves, freeze frame, page 2. Sports cards, page 7. On page 9, there's hot take. On page 14, there's future star. Posters on page 27. The treehouse on page 31. What's the call on page 52? On page 53, games. Page 54, art gallery. And Buzz Beamer on page 56. And let's go to freeze frame, pages 2 and 3. Man of Steel is a picture of a running back for the Pittsburgh Steelers against the Jets. He's not Superman, but Pittsburgh running back Jaylen Warren nonetheless did a pretty good job of flying through the air against the Jets. A little crooked, but what do you want from a guy with no cape? Warren finished with 44 yards on 12 carries as the Steelers pounded New York 37-15 behind two touchdown passes from Russell Wilson. And our second freeze frame, worth the wait. October 25th, 2024, Los Angeles, California. The Dodgers and the Yankees met in the World Series for the first time in 43 years and produced an instant classic. With L.A. trailing 3-2 in the bottom of the 10th of Game 1, Freddie Freeman hit the first walk-off Grand Slam in Fall Classic history to the delight of teammate Mookie Betts in the foreground. The 6-3 victory propelled the Dodgers to the title, which they won in 5 games. And now let's go to page 8, Who's Who in Sports. And we're going to start with the first line. Jalen Milroe, Alabama Crimson Tide quarterback. His height is 6'2". His weight is 225 pounds. He was born December 13, 2002, hometown, Katy, Texas. Against Georgia on September 28, Milroe threw for 374 yards and ran for 117 more with 4 total TDs as Alabama knocked off the Bulldogs, who were number 2 at the time, 41-34. Last season, Milroe finished 5th in the NCAA passing efficiency and was 6th in voting for the Heisman Trophy as the Tide went 12-2. But did you know, since 2006, a quarterback has won the Heisman Trophy every year except 3. In each case, the non-quarterback was an Alabama player. Paolo Banchero, Orlando Magic forward. His height is 6'10". His weight is 250 pounds. He was born November 2nd, 2002, hometown, Seattle, Washington. the 2022-23 NBA Rookie of the Year, Banchero, blossomed into an all-star in his second season. He averaged 22.6 points, 6.9 rebounds, and 5.4 assists per game as the Magic improved from 34 to 47 wins. The former number one pick out of Duke, Banchero, got off to a hot start in the 2024-25 season, scoring a career-high 50 points on October 28th. Did you know, though, Duke has had five players selected first overall in the NBA draft, more than any other school. And finally, we have Timwa Chawinga, Kansas City current forward. His height is 5'8". He was born September 20th, 1998, hometown, Rumphi District, Malawi. In her first NWSL season, Chawinga set the league record with 20 goals, including at least one against each of the other 13 teams. She scored in eight straight games, also a NWSL record. Chawinga scored nine goals in five games for Malawi as her country won the 2023 Council of Southern Africa Football Association's Women's Championship. But did you know, with her first current goal, Chawinga became the first player from Malawi to score in a NWSL game. Good job, Chawinga. Moving on to warm-up, hot take. Take a chance on QB vet. The time for false modesty has passed. I'm 12 years old, and I know basically everything. And you're what? 11? You look 11, though you might be a tall 10. And surely you know a lot. You've been reading my columns. So you would think that by the time quarterbacks reach the NFL at the age of 22, they too must know everything about playing their position. Alas, lately they seem to know almost nothing at all. As a viral tweet in October noted, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, Trey Lance, Will Levis, Kenny Pickett, Anthony Richardson, Bryce Young, and Zach Wilson were rotting the bench at the same time, despite all being top prospects in their 20s. As this group of young guns floundered, who were the best passers in the league? Old stalwarts like Aaron Rodgers and Matthew Stafford. Hardly the NFL's top quarterbacks have emerged from the previous generation of so-called busts. Sam Darnold, Jared Goff, Baker Mayfield, and Geno Smith. They're each making the most of a second or more often fourth chance. In fantasy football, this group would be called post-hype sleepers, guys that can be acquired cheaply because they already disappointed someone else. Post-hype sleeper sounds like to me like a nap you take after drinking 15 Capri Suns, but the concept is real. Some other team invested top picks in these guys and hyped them up as the faces of their franchises. Then, after those franchises gave up on them, other teams found their quarterbacks on the cheap. So what are we to make of this redeemed team of comeback kids? Is being a QB so hard that a player needs to bounce around for 8 years before he masters throwing the ball with touch? Instant successes like C.J. Stroud would seemingly disagree. Maybe there are just enough C.J. Stroud's generational talents to keep coaches and GMs eagerly drafting QBs too high and then giving up on them too early. I have a different story, and it relates to me knowing everything. NFL offenses have gotten more complex over the years, and defenses have kept pace. A football genius like me may be able to recognize different coverages and formations from my couch, but a modern quarterback needs to see different looks multiple times before he can identify them in the seconds before a snap. And nothing motivates someone to learn defenses more than a few years losing to them. As the greatest coach of all time, Yoda, once told one of his over-the-hill students, the greatest teacher, failure is. There's statistical evidence that these guys are thinking the game at a high level. Among also Rams who are running the league, Goff led the NFL in completion percentage, 74.9, through the season's first 9 weeks. Also in the top 10 were Mayfield, 71.1, number 4, and Darnold, 69.5, number 8. Those numbers suggest three guys adept at taking what the defense is giving them. They also hint at another possible reason for these mid-career renaissances. The NFL has become a league of the check-down pass. The average yard per catch has hovered around 10.9 for the past three seasons. The first three times, it has been below 11. 20 years ago, the savvy veteran game manager was considered an inferior QB archetype to the gunslinger. These days, there is a lot more to running an offense than throwing deep. Or maybe the explanation is simpler still. Darnold and Smith were both drafted by the Jets. Mayfield started out on the Browns, the Jets of the Midwest. Maybe these passes were always every bit the talents their draft position suggested, and they just needed a few years to get over the experience of playing in New York. Okay, I don't know everything, but I know this. Life gets better for quarterbacks after leaving the Jets. So hang in there, Zach Wilson. LOL, the same name game. Back in October, a Colorado Avalanche forward made his NHL debut, joining an elite group of players who can say they played professional hockey at the highest level. But the young man also joined an even smaller group of pro athletes, those whose first and last names are the same. Congratulations, Ivan, below. He joined the ranks of players such as Phoenix Suns center Bol Bol, on the right, and former Portuguese soccer star André, but not Chicago Cubs Hall of Famer Billy Williams, whose given name is not William Williams. No, the man who hit 426 home runs was dubbed Billy at birth. The phenomenon is not limited to athletes in North America. Former Manchester United defenders Gary and Phil Neville don't fit the bill, but their dad, a former cricket player, did, which is why United fans used to sing, Neville, Neville, they're in defense. Neville, Neville, there's future immense. Neville, Neville, they ain't half bad. Neville, Neville, the name of their dad. Bol was named after his great-grandfather, a chief of the Dinka people in South Sudan. Ivan, on the other hand, got his name to eliminate confusion. My dad's name is Merrick, and his last name is Ivan. Ivan explained earlier this year. Since Merrick and Ivan are both first names, people are always wondering whether his name was Merrick or Ivan, so he made it easier for them. Rockies Road. The doubly named Ivan grew up as an Avalanche fan in his native Czechia, where he often played as Colorado in video games. Superlatives. And the winners are... The end of the year is upon us, which means it's time to hand out award for superlative performances from 2024. The envelopes, please. Blob of the Year. Entering their June 12 game, the Mets were a dismal 28-37. That night, the first pitch was thrown out by McDonald's mascot Grimace. New York won that night, and the next night, and the next night. The Mets wound up winning 7 in a row following the amorphous creature's pitch and went 61-36 after his appearance, good enough to secure a wild card spot. The year in, huh? Head scratcher of the year. Yankees manager Aaron Boone took exception to a narrative surrounding Cleveland's Jose Ramirez. If I hear another case of how underappreciated, underrated he is from somebody on TV, I want to rip my arms off and throw it at the TV, Boone said. Nice, but if he's torn off his arms, how can he throw them at the screen? Crime of the Year. Approximately 19,000 bobbleheads featuring a likeness of hockey star Jaromir Jagr were stolen and ultimately recovered in March when thieves posing as truckers took them from a warehouse. Runners-up. Western Kentucky's mascot, Big Red, is basically a big red version of Grimace. The Hilltoppers honored him by putting his eyes on a special helmet for their game against UTEP on October 10th. It was delightful and also kind of creepy. 500 Performer of the Year. Donnie Jensen was a winner and a loser in Toronto 4-1 victory over Boston in August. The game began in June when Jensen was with the Blue Jays, but was suspended due to weather. Jensen was then traded and suited up for Red Sox as the game was completed. He batted for both teams in the same inning. Ball Hawk of the Year. Mariners fan Josh George, who was sitting about 300 feet from home plate, snagged foul balls off the bat of Seattle's Josh Rojas on consecutive pitches in May. "I used all of the luck from my life right there," said George, who was invited by the team to throw out two ceremonial opening pitches the next day. Return of the Year. In September, DeMar Hamlin of the Bills made his first start since he collapsed on the field in January 2023 due to a rare and often fatal heart condition. 2 weeks later, the safety came up with his first career interception. Fan of the Year. Who says athletes aren't cynical and lack passion? After Lakers rookie Quincy Oliveri, who slept in a Steph Curry jersey as a kid, met his hero before an exhibition game, he was moved to tears. Curry handled the moment beautifully, giving Oliveri a signed pair of shoes. Achoo! Of the Year. Soccer player Victor Abadibioyo of Bolton Wanderers missed a game after aggravating a back injury by sneezing. Race of the Year. Running on ultramarathon is hard enough without chewing, but that didn't stop the competitors in the Taco Bell 50K, who ran 31 miles while stopping for food at 9 Taco Bells. Neat Freaks of the Year. The Bengals and Commanders played an entire game with no punts or turnovers, the first time that's happened since the NFL began full stats in 1940. Warm-up. Are you a future star? Future star Dexter McLean, Jr., birthplace Buford, Georgia, birthdate September 6, 2009, sport baseball. When Dexter played at the Braves' Truist Park for the Hank Aaron Invitational Showcase game, one word sprang up. Dang! "I worked hard enough to get there," says Dexter, the top-ranked player in the class of 2028. "I could be working harder to be playing here every day." He wouldn't be out of place. An outfielder and pitcher, Dexter has cracked 94 miles per hour on his exit velocity and on his fastball. After batting .357 with the under-15 national team in September, he is focused on staying in the moment ahead of his first varsity season with Buford High. Are you a future star? If you think you have what it takes to be a future star, have an adult submit your nomination at sportskids@si.com. And there are some nice pictures of Dexter on pages 14 and 15. What if it was up to you to navigate the Shaq Kobe Lakers dynasty while trying to avoid this outcome? Staying up well into the night to watch TV isn't always easy, which you find out as you try to keep your eyes open during a documentary about the Los Angeles Lakers. There are plenty of interesting characters, Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal, but it's getting late and you feel your eyelids drooping. You jolt awake, but instead of finding yourself on the couch in your den, you're on the Lakers bench. The fans are all wearing Utah Jazz gear. It's loud, it's disorienting, and you're in charge. Decision number one, you sneak a look at a box score on the table next to you. The date is May 12, 1997. That is before you were born. But whatever, it's game five of the second round of the playoffs. You look at the scoreboard. There are 10 seconds left, and the score is 89-89. You check the box score and see that the 7-foot-1 Shaq, your most unstoppable offensive weapon, has fouled out. You also see that Kobe, in his rookie season, has just 11 points. His fellow guard, Nick Van Exel, has 26. Your Lakers have the ball and are huddled around you, waiting for instruction. You think it over quickly and come to the conclusion that you can do one of two things. You can set up a shot for Van Exel, who averaged 15.3 points per game during the season and has great three-point range. Or you can put the ball in the hands of the 18-year-old Kobe, who averaged 7.6. The players look at you and ask for your call. What do you use? A, Nick Van Exel, or B, Kobe Bryant? Van Exel takes the shot. Kobe dribbles the ball into the front court as the clock ticks down towards zero. The play you've drawn up involves the Lakers setting up a series of screens along the baseline to free up Van Exel in the corner for what will hopefully be an open shot. As the play unfolds, you can see Kobe wants to shoot, but he does as you instructed him. He passes to Van Exel, whose three-pointer from the corner touches nothing but net. The Lakers win 92-89, and you feel like a genius. Los Angeles roars back to win the series, but gets eliminated in the conference finals by the Houston Rockets. After the game and into the next season, you begin to notice, though, that Kobe is becoming more passive. The killer instinct you saw brewing in his rookie season is gone. In short, his confidence has been crushed. For the next few seasons, Kobe's game stagnates. Shaq can only take the Lakers so far, and you never win a title. You had dreams that Bryant would be fierce like an animal in the wild. Instead, as you sit at your desk dozing off, the last thing you see is a story in the local newspaper that compares Kobe to the meekest of creatures, the garter snake. Your adventure is over. You call on Kobe. As the huddle breaks, you tell Kobe to bring the ball up the floor and create his own shot. The message is clear. I trust you. This is your moment. It's a strong statement to send to a teenager. Unfortunately, Kobe's shot is a reminder of how young and inexperienced he is. He hoists an air ball, sending the game to overtime. In the extra period, he fires up three more air balls. The Lakers lose, and the season is over. As you head for the bus, you try to give Kobe a pep talk, but he doesn't need one. He's fired up, motivated to never repeat that kind of performance, but emboldened by your confidence in him. He tells you, "You know what? One day people are going to fear me, the same way they fear the Black Mamba." And he's right. The Lakers win a title in 2000, and again the next season, and again the next. Your three-peat has you feeling invincible. Go to decision two. Decision two. You've won three titles in a row. What could possibly go wrong? Well, there's an easy answer. Personalities. During your time with the Lakers, you've noticed that Kobe and Shaq don't get along. When Kobe was a rookie, Shaq, who is 6 years older, barely spoke to him, insisting he wasn't going to be babysitting. Shaq likes to laugh. He stars in a movie as a rapping genie. Kobe, who keeps talking about Black Mambas, is all business. That even applies to pickup games. During one, he's playing with such intensity that Shaq actually smacks him. Their budding rivalry isn't a problem when things are going well, but during each of your team's title runs, Shaq is named Finals MVP. You get the sense that Kobe wants the Lakers to be his team. Things get even worse in 2003. With an early playoff loss, a defeat in the 2004 Finals pushes the situation to the brink. Kobe is set to become a free agent. You obviously want to keep him in the fold, but you're not sure he'll come back if Shaq is still in Los Angeles. Shaq, meanwhile, has said, "I don't want to be a part of this if the Lakers keep making decisions that he views as being made to placate Kobe." As much as you'd love to keep the team, which still has championship potential, together, you know you can't. You're going to have to let one of your two stars depart. Who do you let leave? C, Shaq? Or D, Kobe? D, Kobe. After flirting with heading to the Los Angeles Clippers, Bryant decides to sign with Miami in free agency. He and Dwayne Wade immediately form a partnership that makes the Heat a perennial threat in the Eastern Conference. The pair can't quite get over the championship hump by themselves, though. After a few near misses, the Heat look to add talent in the summer of 2010. As LeBron James hints free agency, the King decides to take his talents to South Beach, as does Chris Bosh. suddenly Miami has a big four, never mind a big three. The quartet stays together for a four-year stretch during which the team wins the finals every year. That gives Kobe seven titles, one more than Jordan won in his career. You, on the other hand, are stuck on three. A sad fact you ponder as you sit in your office and start to doze off, moment before jolting awake in your den. Your adventure is over. C. The Miami Heat, Shaq departs. The Miami Heat offer a package of three players and two draft picks for Shaq. You don't love it, but you know it's the best you're going to do. Shaq immediately forms a healthy relationship with Miami star Dwayne Wade. In their second year together, the Heat win the NBA title. With Wade, the star, and O'Neal, who's now 33, settling into the sidekick role, his average of 20 points per game season is a career low, but he has a ring to show for it. As for your Lakers, things eventually come together, with Kobe in control. L.A. makes three straight finals, winning in 2009 and 2010. That gives you and Kobe five titles and a chance in history. Go to decision three. Decision number three. If you and Kobe can get a sixth ring, you'd equal the number won by Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson with the Chicago Bulls. But after a second-round ouster at the hands of the Oklahoma City Thunder in 2012 playoffs, it's clear your star is going to need help. During that summer, you make several phone calls to other teams and come to learn that a pair of perennial all-stars, Dwight Howard and two-time MVP Steve Nash, are available on the trade market. It won't be easy or cheap, but you think you've discovered a way to acquire both of them to pair with Bryant and give your team a big three of its own. Do you make the trade? E, no. F, yes. To be continued. Let's go to what's the call. Number one, cool move. Buzz and Whitney are in a speed skating race. Whitney has a small lead as they approach the finish line, but Buzz dives head first and his body, arm, head, and torso cross the finish line before Whitney, who is still upright. Who wins? Do 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 do. Whitney wins. A skater is not considered to have completed a race until the tip of their skate crosses the finish line. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.